طفلة تمتطي قوس قزح.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly 45-minute segment of news from Palestine and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's brutal military occupation and colonization of their homeland. This program presents news and analysis from the Palestinian perspective, a perspective we do not get from the mainstream media. This Week in Palestine was created and for many years produced by the late Sharif Fahm, and is now continued by his friends and colleagues in his memory. This is John Roberts. This morning, we will be discussing some recent political events in Palestine with Samer Jaber, a resident of Bethlehem, who is an activist currently studying for his master's degree in international sustainable development at Brandeis University and the Kennedy School of Government. I first met Samer in the fall of 2007 when a delegation from the Cambridge Bethlehem People to People Project visited Bethlehem, and again the next year when my wife and I returned to continue the development of contacts in the region, with which Samer was enormously helpful. Samer has an ear to the ground in the West Bank, and we always value his take on events within Palestinian society. We will talk with him in a minute about some of these events, but first, this news from Palestine. Last week in Tikwa village near Bethlehem, Israeli settlers attacked Palestinian families, which led to a clash between the residents of the village and Israeli forces. According to Ma'an News, the incident happened when a Palestinian mother taking her two children to school was attacked, which was followed by an Israeli military invasion of the town. Villagers, angered by the incident, were seen burning tires and throwing stones at the invading Israeli troops. Local witnesses said that the Israeli forces raided the village, firing tear gas and rubber bullets at the residents. Israel also launched a new ground incursion into the Gaza Strip, with its forces advancing hundreds of meters into the east of the southern town of Khan Yunis. Israeli troops attacked a group of Gazans with live fire while they were collecting gravel nearby. One of them suffered injuries and had to be taken to the local hospital to receive medical treatment. The attack followed flights by Israeli fighter jets over Gaza last Tuesday. For over 3 years, Israel has kept closed all borders crossing to the Gaza Strip. Since June 2007, the illegal blockade in Gaza has been steadily tightened, having a disastrous impact on the humanitarian and economic situation in the coastal strip. The 1.5 million population is being denied basic rights, including adequate living conditions and freedom of movement. In a report released early last week, the UN says there has been no material change for people in Gaza since Israel announced it was easing its economic blockade of the Palestinian territory. In June, Israel said it would lift some of its restrictions in Gaza to allow more food and consumer goods to enter. The move followed international pressure after the deaths of 9 Turkish activists aboard a flotilla of ships trying to break the blockade. The head of UN operations in Gaza said few people had noticed any difference. "There has been no material change for the people on the ground here in terms of their status, the aid of dependency, the absence of any recovery or reconstruction of the economy," the UN's John Ging told the BBC. The easing, as it has been described, has been nothing more than a political easing of pressure on Egypt and Israel. Chief Palestinian negotiator Dr. Saeb Erekat on November 9th said, "Israel's latest announcement of more settlement construction further threatens the already stagnant negotiation process. This latest Israeli unilateral act necessitates dramatic international action for immediate recognition of a Palestinian state on the June 4, 1967 international borders. The day before, November 8th, the Israeli government announced a plan for 1,300 more new housing units in the settlements of Har Homah and Ramat to be illegally built on occupied lands in Bet Sohor and East Jerusalem. That announcement was quickly followed by news of a private construction start of approximately 800 units in the Ariel settlement in the northern West Bank. Erekat further stated, "Once more, at the moment when we expect Prime Minister Netanyahu to announce a full settlement freeze from Washington, D.C., he has sent Palestinians and the U.S. a clear message that Israel chooses settlements, not peace." Netanyahu sent the same message during Vice President Biden's visit last March by announcing a plan to build 1,600 new settlement units. Israel's settlement enterprise, which comprises not only the actual settlements, but also the wall, settler-only roads, and movement restrictions on Palestinians, is nothing but a premeditated process to kill the possibility of an independent Palestinian state, said Erekat. Calling on the international community to immediately and boldly intervene to save the two-state solution and the possibility of lasting peace, Dr. Erekat continued, "Israel is acting as a state above the law, and the international community must react. If, by building settlements, Israel wants to boycott the creation of a sovereign Palestinian state, the world must respond by recognizing the Palestinian state on the 1967 borders with East Jerusalem as its capital." Dr. Erekat continues, "It is time for tough decisions. Unfortunately, the international community continues to support a peace process that has nothing of peace and a lot of process. We will not accept the status quo anymore that has only allowed Israel to consolidate its occupation of our land." Samer, for several weeks, we have watched these trial balloons launched from Palestine concerning the unilateral declaration of a Palestinian state based on the 1967 international border by not only Erekat, but also from Prime Minister Salam Fayyad and President Mahmoud Abbas. How is this strategy viewed on the street in the West Bank? Is there a popular opinion or reaction to this? And if so, what is it?
Well, Palestinians for sure will be happy to see their the time that comes to have Day of Independence. But we need to keep in mind that in 1988, in November, 15 November, Palestinians declared the Independence Day. And since that time, we celebrate as Palestinians every November 15, this day as Independent Day. However, if we declare that we need to have another Independent Day, this means that we will duplicate the thing. Another thing that mainly people ask, okay, we will have Independent Day or declare that we are independent state, but what's about our sovereignty? And we mean by this, there are many Israeli settlements, Israeli apartheid roads, borders, water, these different things of sovereignty that represent sovereignty. What will happen? Like, do we have just to have two kind of authorities? One by the occupation, the Israeli occupation, and the other by Palestinians who just administrate the social day-to-day life. So this is the main concern of Palestinian people.
This declaration, they claim is to be on the 1967 borders, of course. There are almost a 500,000 settlers now and settlements on Palestinian territory. And so this is a very bold claim that would be made by the Palestinians to say this is our state and it's on the international border. The Palestinians have no military to back it up. In 1948, when Israel declared its independence, of course, had a strong military. And also, in terms of getting the support of the United Nations, we know that the United States has a veto in the Security Council. So I'm wondering what Palestine thinks it can count on in terms of support of the international community or and the United Nations if they make this kind of a bold claim.
Yeah, actually, according to Saad Barakat, and here I just want to represent different point of views of Palestinians. So Saad Barakat said that before we do this, we need to conciliate with U.S., with European and Russians. So those are the key players in the process. So actually, mainly United States that has the real veto in Security Council will decide the future of any declaration of Palestinian state. So it's a kind of management issue that Palestinian Authority need to do with U.S. administration. However, also we need to keep in mind that how to change this on the ground. We need to see real change on the ground, real facts. So we need the international community to enforce any kind of declaration for independent states, and mainly the Americans. Actually, Americans already and have real existence to solidate and to support Palestinian Authority, mainly in the West Bank, by training Palestinian troops, by creating a new management system for Palestinian Authority institutions. But the question becomes again, what's the role of the international community and mainly the United States to recognize and enforce the declaration of Palestinian state?
Shouldn't the Palestinian authorities wait until there is a reconciliation between Hamas, which controls Gaza, and Fatah, which controls the West Bank, before unilaterally declaring a Palestinian state? In other words, before executing such a risky strategy, shouldn't the Palestinian people be more politically unified? We will be discussing this issue in another context in a few minutes, but how does the unification issue relate to the unilateral declaration of statehood?
Well, Palestinians now, as most of the people know, that they are fragmented, and so they don't have one voice. So if the Palestinian Authority went to United Nations asking for declaration of Palestinian state, Palestinians need to have one voice that confirms this question, this issue. However, Palestinians are divided into West Bank and Gaza. This means that we have two different authorities, one that is recognized by the international community, that is Abu Mazen, Islam Fayyad government, and the other one that won the election and did not, that was not recognized by international community, that is Hamas authority. Mm. And this would affect, actually, from a tactic point of view, the Israelis would say easily that it's just a step from Abu Mazen, it's not a step from the whole Palestinian people.
I know you can't answer this, but I'm wondering whether the Palestinians have tested the international waters at all, or even within the UN, and have gotten any kind of feedback, you know, before making this bold declaration. But I guess there's no way to know that. But one would hope that they would have tested the water somehow and sense out there some international support if they went ahead and did this.
Well, already Palestinians have embassies in more than 100 countries all over the world. So already we have this recognition, and all the international community recognize that Israeli-Palestinian conflict is the core conflict in the Middle East. So this from one perspective. But regard to a new declaration of independence, Clinton said that the United States administration will recognize anything out of the negotiation results, not as unilateral step. This means that United States is not willing to recognize any and legitimize any Palestinian step, and this means that it's unbalanced and already recognized that they are just acknowledging what Israel would agree on.
On a new topic, Palestinian Prime Minister Salim Fayyad, educated at the University of Texas and viewed by many as close, perhaps too close, to the United States power brokers, is given credit for preceding the statehood declaration strategy with the oversight of the development of an expansive infrastructure within the West Bank, with over 1,000 development projects in progress, including paving roads, planting trees, digging wells, and constructing new buildings, courthouses, industrial parks, even a new city, Rawabi, between Ramallah and Nablus. Certainly this development is a boost toward the hope of a viable Palestinian state. But it also raises questions. As part of the development program, Fayyad has reformed the police and other security forces, increasing the ability to provide law and order within the West Bank. But he has also created a program for counterterrorism, which is primarily but not solely directed toward containing, if not defeating, Hamas. The goal, some believe, is to prove that the Palestinian Authority is capable of providing security so that Israeli troops can safely withdraw should statehood be achieved. The problem is that this counterterrorism is being done in collaboration with Israel and the United States, and is viewed by many Palestinians as fueling heavy-handed suppression of dissent. How is this counterterrorism project viewed among dissenting Palestinians? And, you know, is there active repression of dissent on the ground in the West Bank?
Actually, it's clear that dissenting Palestinians are suffering out of this military and police system because this intent to muzzle people out and do not give them a freedom of speech, and to provide alternative voice for the dominant policies. But it's not the question among just dissident people. It's a question among regular people who see from one hand a difference in controlling the situation, like the security situation in general, and this has a positive effect. But the other negative effect is minimizing or eliminating the margin of freedom. Freedom of expression, freedom of providing alternative way and criticizing the Palestinian Authority and the quote-unquote peace process. So it's a kind of military system that instead of having just Israeli face, now we have mixed Israeli-American Palestinian face that just intend to muzzle any dissident voice.
At the center of the Palestinian government security reforms are several special battalions of the National Security Forces, an 8,000-member unit that comprises the largest unit of the 25,000-member Palestinian armed forces in the West Bank. The officer in charge of vetting, training, equipping, and the strategic planning of the special Palestinian battalions is Lieutenant Colonel Keith Dayton, the United States Security Coordinator for Israel and the Palestinian Authority. Is this collaboration well known on the street, or is it somewhat of a kept secret? In other words, do the Palestinian people understand that it is the United States, in collaboration with Israel, that's really training the Palestinian Authority forces?
Yeah, actually, this was clear a few months ago, actually, maybe 2 years ago, when one of the first Palestinian-American trained group attacked some Palestinian activists in Qalqilia. It's a city in the north of West Bank, and killed them. And this was clear in the Palestinian media and even in the Israeli media, show how much the training by Americans affected the skills and performance of Palestinian police. So it's already known, and nobody can hide this, that Palestinian security groups are collaborating with Israelis and with Americans. It's more than this. Now we are in one more advanced step, that also they exchange clearly information under the program that deal with security issues, and even in the ideology of the Palestinian leaders who lead these security groups, consider that the security of Israel is part of the security of Palestinians. Mm-hmm. And that's why they are intended to protect the security of Israel. It's for sure that the security of Israel is part of the security of certain Palestinians who take advantage of this collaboration. So Palestinian Authority actually defamed, marked themselves with a certain collaboration with Israel through training and help of American Marshal Dayton.
Do you think that this so-called counterterrorism effort has the ultimate goal of cleansing the West Bank of dissent to pave the way for a possible unpopular declaration of a Palestinian state based on the fragmented territory and bantustans that define the Palestinian territory today?
Well, first of all, we need to say that in 1998, Palestinian Israelis, American, with the help of Egyptians and international community, held a conference against terrorism in Taba, and put a plan to fight terrorism, because during that time some Palestinian dissident refused to continue the peace process, especially after finishing the period of interim agreement. So what will happen after this? Palestinian Authority give security to Israeli occupation, but they did not get something in response. Nowadays, Palestinians would ask how much this collaboration will contribute to Palestinian sovereignty, because daily invasion to the Palestinian cities and towns by the Israeli troops. Israeli troops control the entrance of Palestinian cities and towns. Israeli troops control the existence across the border, in Egypt, Egypt, Gaza Strip borders, and West Bank, Jordan borders. So this collaboration might, and for sure will, contribute to the Israeli security, but will not contribute to the Palestinian security. And this means that Palestinians, actually, in general, are careless, because they consider this is just a kind of killing time without taking a real steps toward having new strategy. That strategy that consider that Palestinians have to develop their own institution, their own ability to struggle from within, not depending just on supporting from United States or with a collaboration with Israel.
During the Israeli assault on Gaza, apparently there were stronger protests and demonstrations within Arab communities in Israel than there were in the West Bank. If true, do you think that it might have been an effect of the Palestinian Authority's collaborative counter-terror terrorism program established in the West Bank that, you know, that led to that that suppression?
Yeah, actually, I have one personal story during the invasion or the attack, actually, in Gaza. We tried to go to demonstrations to protest what taking place in Bethlehem. We were in front of Church of Nativity, and also it's happened that also one of the famous mosques in front of the church there. So people gathered there, and this was Friday, and also a lot of Palestinian security groups surrounded the crowd, and it was clear heavy. Presence of these Palestinian troops to prevent any kind of protest. And when I was protesting these actions, one of the actually one of my relatives who happened to work in these troops, in these security troops, approached me and said, if you just open your mouth, we will take you to jail. Mm-hmm. So this reflect what kind of measures Palestinian authorities now take in order to muzzle and to limit the freedom of speech in Palestinian cities and towns. This was in Bethlehem. Bethlehem is a kind of liberal city that have a mixture of Christians and Muslims, and people coexist peacefully in the last during the past, and there's no real violence in the city, and Palestinians usually used to express them their opinion, especially toward Palestinian issues, internal Palestinian issues, very peacefully. But even these peaceful protests were prevented during the invasion mm-hmm. on Gaza. So this is one of the stories that reflect what kind of measures taken by these security Palestinian security forces.
Mm. So it did have an effect, yeah. Obviously, with Hamas in control of Gaza, the Israeli-United States collaboration is not a factor there in the way that it is in the West Bank. From what you know, and I know you have closer ties in the West Bank than in Gaza, but how is dissent handled in Gaza by Hamas?
The situation in Gaza is different because Israel imposed this siege that prevent Palestinians from moving, but also Hamas does not give people enough space to express their opinions. So there is no space to criticize Hamas, and mainly for how they manage the daily life day to day life. And so the main issue between Gaza and West Bank, that in Gaza Strip, Hamas actually attacking Fatah activists mm-hmm. does not allow them to express their own opinions. The same issue in the West Bank. Salam Fayyad and Abu Mazen Authority does not allow Hamas people to express themselves. So jails on both sides are full with rivals, and this actually reflects itself on Palestinian social structure and social fiber, because you can find in the same family a person from Fatah and a person from Hamas, and you are actually dividing the same family, and this would reflect have escalation in the future. So also I would say that Gaza, maybe the occupation and day-to-day life enforce and impose itself on the Palestinian tension, but also I think there are a lot of violations for human rights also in Gaza committed by Hamas authority.
Mm-hmm. The competing political parties, Hamas and Fatah, have resumed reconciliation talks in a bid to heal the rift that has led to the Israeli-occupied territories of the West Bank and Gaza Strip being governed by two separate bodies. However, officials of the rival Fatah and Hamas movements ended their meeting seeking reconciliation in Damascus late on Tuesday night without declaring the outcome of the talks. The main obstacle in unity talks is the security file, as both movements still insist on their stances regarding the issue, especially the issue of uniting all security forces under one leadership. Referring to Israeli and U.S. threats of not recognizing any unity agreement or arrangement that includes Hamas, Hamas has said that Fatah movement must decide to be independent and should not allow Israel to interfere in internal Palestinian politics. Do you think such a Fatah-Hamas reconciliation is possible, given the condition by Hamas that Fatah must rid itself of Israeli and U.S. collaboration, such as now apparently exists in the Palestinian Authority's counter-terrorism project?
Well, first of all, it's a question of democracy more than a question of security, because as we know that after the election of 2006-2007, so international community did not recognize Hamas winning the elections. So this affected the results and led to this splitting between Gaza Strip and West Bank. So later on, this issue developed to become a security issue and reflected itself in Palestinian internal conflict. So people now, and mainly Hamas, keep asking what will happen if we just recognize the legitimate authority in the West Bank, and you do not recognize our legitimate authority in Gaza, and mean that, okay, if we give you the authority again, even it's our main right according to the election results, how we can protect ourselves, since we already know, according to the new information, that some security groups have certain groups just targeting some Palestinian activists and mainly Hamas activists by killing. And we have what we already know as the death troop that were discovered after Hamas took over over Gaza. So the issue that the interest to solve this internal Palestinian conflict is not actually also in the hand of Palestinians, because this is the second time after two rivals signed the agreement in Mecca. They call it Mecca Agreement. I think this 3 years ago, the international community did not recognize this, because out of Mecca Agreement, Fatah and Hamas established one united government, but even though Israel and United States deep cut in the fund and in the budget of Palestinian Authority, and prevented this reconciliation from taking place on the ground. So the key players also are not the Palestinians, the key players are Americans and Europeans. If this viewed as in the interest of international community, and here the international community is U.S. and Europe, then this unity will be enforced and have internal momentum to succeed. However, according to the facts on the ground, we see that this will continue, because Salam Fayyad will be supported with a quote-unquote Western governments, and Hamas will be supported by quote-unquote by Iranian fund.
Both the United States and Israel have claimed that they will not deal with Hamas as a partner in the peace process. That they will not recognize them, even though Hamas was elected to power. And there are these negotiations going on between Hamas and Fatah in Damascus. I'm wondering if Fatah and Hamas do settle their differences and do reconcile in some way, whether that coalition, whether Fatah would say, look, you have to include Hamas now. You know, we're together. We're together as a Palestinian people. Fatah and Hamas have reconciled. You need to recognize Hamas as we go forward. Do you think that's a possible scenario?
Well, I think this possible scenario under one main conditions. We need popular pressure over the two rivals in order to reconcile and recognize each other's as legitimate powers. And this means that Palestinian community and Palestinian civil society should organize to have alternative way, alternative road to reconciliations. Actually, both authorities, and I mean with both authorities, Hamas authorities and Fatah authorities, should recognize each other as one authority under occupation. However, Hamas suffered the siege in Gaza, and I mean with Hamas people in Gaza suffer, because Hamas just a few people that have relations, a few individuals that have social relations with the people, but the majority of the Palestinian people in Gaza suffer out of the siege, and also in the West Bank, also people used to build Israeli settlements, being the labor force for the Israelis, and Palestinian authority there have very limited access to the resources, so they cannot create jobs. And this means that both authorities, whether in West Bank and Gaza, are under the control of the Israeli occupations, and Israeli occupation directs them according to their on interest. And also I believe that United States have a role in this, because if United States see that stability of the area and the whole Middle East will be upon this file, the Palestinian-Israeli conflict file, then they will enforce and support a kind of solution to this file.
Given the fact that the world's only superpower, the United States, and the fourth largest military power, Israel, are aligned against Palestine in terms of creating a unified state within the 1967 borders with East Jerusalem as its capital. What do the Palestinian people have to counter this asymmetry of power?
Well, first of all, we are armed by a just case. Palestinian question is a just case. We are a people who lived there over the last few thousand of years. So we already believe deeply that this is our land, homeland. At the same time, we believe that people own the power. And we mean by this that not just the Palestinian people, we have to work in order to have good relations with people all over the world. And I mean here with supporting the BDS movement, boycott, divestment, and sanction for Palestine to end the Israeli occupation. And this means that we are looking for different resources that support our own cause, the just cause, Palestinian cause. And by people joining the BDS movement and supporting the Palestinian, this would lead to support Palestinian cause and enforce and put pressure on U.S. Administration and European government to put pressure on the Israeli government. This one thing. At the same time, Palestinians have to build real sustainable development economy in order to sit fast under occupation. I don't think that Palestinians are able to have a real prosperous economy, but at least they will have infrastructure that support their steadfast. So as Palestinians, we have, let's say, two main branches in our struggle. International community by supporting the BDS campaign, this on one hand, and the other hand, that we are Palestinians that live in West Bank, Gaza, and inside Israel, have the rights as a human being, as a human, as Palestinians, to put pressure on the on Israel by adopting some popular civil-based struggle, asking for our human rights, and this actually will in Paris, put pressure, internal pressure, in the Israeli community itself.
As a Palestinian living outside Palestine in the United States, As you look at the development of the boycott, divestment, sanctions strategy, do you sense it's building here and in Europe in such a way that it sends some signal of encouragement to the Palestinian people?
Well, I think this, first of all, this strategic long-term tool, it's not something that will have a result within a short time. And I think, yeah, that the movement here in the United States and also in Europe build a momentum, and people start know more about Palestinian cause and why Palestinians always ask for self-determination and independence. And I think, yeah, a lot of people are joining this. And also this, actually, with the help of Palestinian Solidarity International Palestinian Solidarity Movement, that helped to bring some activists to Palestinians, who some of them lost their lives, like Rachel Khoury, who lost her life, and later on her friends and parents succeeded to spread the idea of boycott, mainly in their cooperative in their hometown, and it's spread. And I think this would put a pressure, because it's mainly more than just forcing Israel. It's a moral issue. People would feel that they have commitment toward ending this conflict.
Well, thank you. This is all the time that we have this week. I want to thank Samer. My guest, Samer Jaber, who is an activist, Palestinian activist, studying at Brandeis and the Kennedy School of Government. There's a lot to discuss. We've run out of time. And I certainly hope you'll return in the future so that we can continue to hear your take on events in the West Bank and Gaza. There's an opportunity to see the play My Name is Rachel Khoury, and the companion piece, Seven Jewish Children, this afternoon at Boston University's Photonics Center, room 206, 8 St. Mary Street in Boston. That's at the Boston University Photonics Center. This special performance is to raise money for the U.S. flotilla boat that is being prepared to sail to challenge the blockade of Gaza. So please, if you can make it this afternoon, My Name is Rachel Khoury is being performed at the Boston University's Photonics Center. This is John Roberts signing off for This Week in Palestine. Please tune in next Sunday and every Sunday at 8 a.m. to hear the latest news and commentary from the West Bank and Gaza. Thanks for listening. Good morning from WZBC 90.3 FM.
تسقلوه ماسا لون وطن تسقلوه ماسا لون وطن